You're in tune with What It Is on WNCW. I'm Joe Kendrick, joined by Jeff Eason of The Blowing Rocket, Fred Mills of Blurt Online. 2009 is the 50th anniversary of three pivotal jazz recordings, and we are looking back today on those recordings from Charles Mingus, Mingus Ah Um, Dave Brubeck Quartet's Time Out, and Miles Davis's Kind of Blue.
You know, a lot of people may not realize it, but Kind of Blue is the best-selling jazz album of all time. You know, I can't think of any other genre where an album from half a century ago could still make that claim. And it's still finding, you know, new listeners. I'm sure dorm rooms are cluttered with the vinyl and CD copies of Kind of Blue just as much as they were when I was in college 30 years ago. It's pretty amazing that these groundbreaking albums happened at one time.
You know, that's true. We were talking earlier how there are points in time when there's a lot going on in the culture and society, such obviously 68, 69. We've dealt specifically with those years and what was correspondingly going on in music at that time. And 59, there was a lot going on. We were already in Vietnam. The automobile and the highway system was in the process of completely transforming American life and American migration patterns. Jeff, you mentioned how integration, while it was not completely in our school systems, it was definitely becoming part of our fabric, where blacks and whites were mingling together more and listening to each other's music. The space race was kicking in, so I don't think it's a coincidence that we also had several groundbreaking albums, such as Kind of Blue, happening at that same time.
Yeah, and Dave Brubeck's album is very strange too, because it was one of those albums that it had some classical aspects to it. It actually had a little bit of Latin thing going on, but so much of jazz is this swing where you got to have this strong beat, and he kind of took something different. He had, you know, his two biggest hits from the album, Take Five, is in 5/4 time, which is a very unusual time, and then the other one, Blue Rondo a la Turk, is in 9/8 time, but it's not in a standard 9/8 time, which would be 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, which is sort of like a fast waltz, really. His was 1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-3-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-3, and that was the main motif until it hits this kind of really sultry blues part in the middle, you know, and it really just appealed to people in a whole new way. And even today, it sounds revolutionary.
Well, yeah, the Time Out album, I think, was even kind of considered an experiment, that they weren't even sure if it was going to be released initially. And it became a chart-topping album, which was unheard of for a jazz record at that point to cross over into the pop charts, I believe.
Yeah, the record label wasn't all that keen on the sort of highbrow nature of the record, and it seemed that the public was ahead of the critics, or at least the record company, in a lot of ways.
It's interesting how much the Time Out album, and particularly Take Five and Blue Rondo a la Turk, as well as the Kind of Blue album and some of the songs like So What in particular, that music is so much a part of our DNA now. They've been sampled endlessly. They crop up in commercials, in films. And even if you don't know the name of the song, and I'm sure there are a lot of people out there that can't automatically name a jazz title, but they've heard the music. They've grown up with it. I mean, I remember seeing Brubeck perform this on TV, probably on the Johnny Carson show when I was a kid. I have a vague memory of seeing the Miles Davis Quintet perform So What on TV, and years later it turns up as a DVD track, that kind of thing, or in a jazz documentary. So these songs kind of entered the parlance, so to speak, hugely influential.
It was strange that they're both revolutionary and very, very popular, which very rarely happens in something like that with Miles Davis' Kind of Blue. Previous to that, a lot of the type of jazz that he was doing and other people were doing was based, you played your leads based on the chord sequence and everything like that. And he kind of deconstructed that and made it more modal, to where you were playing on based on different scales, and the scales would change within the song, and the notes in the scale might be these notes in one octave and be different notes in another octave, and which that was very revolutionary, and he explored it even further as he went into the 60s.
And a lot of critics didn't really go for modal at all. Especially in the beginning. Well, another in our lineup of 50th anniversary discs, which didn't sell nearly as many copies as either of the other two, is Charles Mingus's and the bass player with maybe his all-time best work. It's debatable as to whether this is the best album from Charles Mingus, but like so many great works, it builds on the foundations of those who came before him, and you've got songs that are the Open Letter to Duke Ellington,
yeah.
Bird Calls, referencing Charlie Parker.
And that's I love that song, too, because it's a great pun. If you listen to some of the instrumentation in there, it does actually sound like birds chirping and squawking and everything. The Charlie Parker reference is obvious, too.
And then Jelly Roll, which wraps it up, and is obviously the tip of the hat to Jelly Roll Morton. And also some social commentary in as well with the Fables of Faubus, and that is referencing the segregationist Arkansas Governor Orville Faubus, and the record company got skittish and took out the lyrics, which were actually inserted later in the recording Charles Mingus Presents Charles Mingus.
You know, Mingus was an activist in his own right, very outspoken guy, and he was one of these larger-than-life personalities that we sometimes like to tip our hats to at what it is. He's got this great autobiography that I would recommend to anybody called Beneath the Underdog, in which he talks a little bit about his musical theories, but it's more more memoir-style autobiography. Lots of colorful sexual exploits outlined in there, you know, some few tales of druggy misadventures, but it gives you some insights into how this guy thought and operated. He was a moody guy, and he could be very combative, but, you know, his genius just comes through, particularly on this album. I like that song. Love the title, Better Get It In Your Soul, which opens the album. It's almost like this cinematic, hectic, Looney Tunes-type composition. It just makes you grin from ear to ear listening to it. So as serious as we sometimes credit jazz as being an art form, there's a lot of playfulness that really comes through in a composer like Mingus's work that I just love.
And keep in mind, too, in 1959, a lot of these jazz greats were kind of on the outside looking in as far as acceptance within the society as a whole. I saw recently the video of Charles Mingus being evicted from his apartment, and there were news cameras, and so this was all being put on the evening news, I imagine, at the time. And they found his heroin needle and arrested him at the same time. And it's really disheartening to watch that sort of sad episode play out. And it brings to mind that these guys were kind of pariahs in a lot of sectors of the country.
You know, I think some albums just need to be revisited by each successive generation because you can read about the artists and find out just what you're talking about. It's a window into our past, and typically it's the artists and the creative class that is at the forefront of whatever changes may be going on in society. And so it's not surprising that, you know, an outspoken person like Mingus or even Miles was no shrinking violet himself, would be caught up in some of the turmoil. This year, listeners should know, if they don't know, Sony Legacy issued 50th anniversary collector's editions of all three of the albums we're talking about. The Mingus is now a double disc along with bonus tracks. The Brubeck Time Out album is a double disc plus bonus DVD, and they just went all out with the kind of blue 50th anniversary thing, this oversized box set with two discs, a DVD, and just loads more stuff than they put on the remastered reissue that came out a few years ago. So these would be the artifacts you want to seek out.
Yeah, these are the albums that define the direction of jazz until today. There would be no Flecktones, you know, without these albums. There would be no jazz fusion without these albums, I don't believe.
Well, you know, people like Duane Allman cited Miles's kind of blue as an influence on him, along with other artists like Coltrane. I mean, let's not forget, a year later, Coltrane's Giant Steps came out. Mm-hmm. So it really was the beginning of the coming 60s musical revolution, and I think everybody knows that the 60s was a very good era for jazz in general, with a lot of experimentation, a lot of barrier breaking, a lot of synthesis of other genres such as the rock jazz fusion. So so here we are, 1959. This is kind of ground zero, isn't it?
What do you think? Email us what it is at wncw.org. Your thoughts on the 50th anniversary of these key jazz releases, Mingus, Miles Davis, and Dave Brubeck. For Public Radio, I'm Joe Kendrick, joined by Jeff Eason and Fred Mills. Until next time.